This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. The city of Hartford has seen 19 homicides so far this year. It's the same number as all of 2014. There's nothing new, of course, about an increase in violence during the summer months, but Hartford Mayor Pedro Segarra has admitted the police force could use help. He's called on the state to provide more manpower and more resources. This spike in violence comes during a summer when all of America is watching videos of confrontations between white police officers and African Americans, too many of which have led to deaths. In Hartford, a video surfaced recently of a policeman subduing a suspect with repeated baton blows. It prompted anger on social media, but after the department released information quickly and publicly responded, much of that anger has died down. There is still a question about how the Hartford police can build community trust and get their help from the community to stop violent crime. Later on, we'll hear from community members about their perceptions of violence and policing the city. But first, Chief James Rivella sat down with us in studio yesterday. Chief Rivella, welcome back to Where We Live. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you for inviting me.
First, let me just start with the number that I think a lot of people in Hartford and around the state have been talking about. We've seen 19 homicides so far in Hartford. That's the same number as we had all of last year. From where you sit, what do you see when you see this number?
Well, we see a lot of things, John. And first of all, gun violence is one of the worst things for the city and guns in general. And when you put those in folks' hands that are either of youth age or what we're seeing now is the 20-somethings into the 30s that are using these firearms, they're kind of disturbing to me and to the department, and they take a more in-depth look, which we've been doing. We're seeing some stress from our out-of-town suburbs where folks are coming in, doing their business here and returning. We're also seeing a little stress with our probation and our parole population in our city. But it's folks that want to solve the simplest of conflicts with a firearm.
Mm. When you say people from the suburbs coming in to do their business, what do you mean?
Well, they actually have residences outside of the city that they reside in. And when they come in to do their business, we are seeing a lot of these shootings revolve around narcotics, along with the simplest of beefs or arguments.
Should we make anything of the fact that we've seen more violence this summer than in previous summers, as the numbers in overall murders has been dropping over the years? What's happening specifically this summer that's different? Because some of the things that you just enumerated, we've been hearing, frankly, for years.
Yeah, we have been hearing these numbers and these causation factors for years. So let's take a look at let's take homicides out of the equation for just a second. Let's look at the number of people shot in the city, which we watch very closely. We're averaging about our 2013 numbers before the very good year in 2014. So we watch those numbers, and we're trending upward from there, which is disturbing to us. So what do we see as we dig into that? We are seeing these small groups that engage in violence. We are seeing other groups that engage in violence over drugs. And we are seeing the older population, which is somewhat diverse for us this time around. Previous years, we saw a lot of youth violence. And now it's probably one-third in there. So we have a lot of different avenues to pursue.
When the mayor of the city, Pedro Segarra, went to the governor and asked for help to deal with this problem, I'm quite sure that you probably had some input into what the mayor was going to ask for. So what are you folks asking for from the state? What will help?
All right. So this was a thought process. Once we saw the uptick in violence early in the year, we started to spend a lot of money on saturation and police visibility. We felt police officers out there, and that's what the public wanted. And if the public wants that, I think they deserve it from us as they're our taxpayers. So as we trended upwards in our shootings, we realized, hey, we want to get back to the full-blown shooting task force model. So what that includes is representatives from probation, representatives from parole, the Connecticut State Police, Manchester, East Hartford, Bloomfield, Windsor, where we see some of our folks coming from. I have other officers from juvenile parole in there. I have coordination with all my federal agencies and my state agencies around a simple theory that we're all in this together and we're all affected by each other's residents or each other's clients in whatever area they may be. So that was what I crafted for the mayor. We also threw in what we feel is a stopgap measure with the use of some uniformed Hartford police matched up with some uniformed troopers for a traffic component. As we see our guns and drugs, they move in cars. And that's the way it's been for the last 50 years. The two are synonymous.
So what has the response been? I know that the governor came and met with folks in the North End. I know he's been engaged in conversations with the mayor. What do you think is going to come out of this? Are you going to get this longer-term fix to reconstitute the shooting task force in the way that you'd like moving forward?
Well, the support has been overwhelming, and we want to make sure that support continues in some fashion as we get farther into the year and into the new year of next year. We're already in conversations with the Chief State's Attorney's Office and how do we fashion our longer-term investigations, or how do we send some of these cases to the federal level with our U.S. Attorney partners who have been also very good to us. So we are constructing a longer-term fix for the precision-guided arrests, investigations and arrests of our shooters.
And are you going to be putting more troopers with Hartford Police on the streets over the course of the summer months? That's something, frankly, Chief, we've seen many, many years. I mean, 10 years ago we had this conversation. 5 years ago we had that conversation. And, you know, there's always a question. There's just more cops working together, rolling around in cars. Does that actually help things along the way? So is that part of the solution this time?
Well, we started that solution early on with our Hartford police officers. And let me speak about my Hartford police officers just a little bit. They know our streets. They know the folks in the streets, both good and bad. There's a lot of agencies and churches out there that are helping us. So saturation with Hartford cops is what I prefer. And those are those uniform presence. And if you look at my overtime budget, we have been saturating the areas. Not bent on arrests, but bent on visibility and conversation with folks. I did choose a traffic component with uniformed troopers matched up with my uniformed officers, which we'll employ at different points around the summertime and into the fall. I think that is the best because what happens is the telephone tree starts. The boys, the police are out at this location or that location and stay in and keep your gun at home.
So this gets to, you know, part of the big conversation in America about police and communities right now is that we just saw again the other day. I mean, we were dealing with one in Texas, and now we just saw one in Cincinnati that hit the news yesterday. And there is a feeling amongst many people in the country that African Americans are stopped at a much higher rate than the rest of the population. And in part, that happens because police are looking for things. I guess I'm wondering, Chief, if you can talk about that balance for your force, because right now it seems as though we're in a time in America at which police might need to be a little bit more careful about just sort of pulling people over to look in their cars, if you take my point.
Yes, I do. So you have a couple of things in there, John, that we pay a lot of attention to, and we have since 2011 when I first came back to the city. You had the big study by Mr. Barone out at Central Connecticut State University that talked about traffic studies and disparity by all the statewide police organizations. You know, when I go out to community events, I wanted to say I had hoped it wasn't true. I suspected it was so, but there was no need to wait in 2011 to start a change. Less traffic stops, less arrests, less juvenile arrests, less field interview cards, and those are those very unpopular stops by police officer. Less, and less. And even though crime has increased this year, I'm not saying that there's any correlation between less arrests and crime increasing, because that is a portion of doing business that we have to change in our law enforcement area. So as we move towards reconciliation, I believe is the best way to put it, is with our communities of color in the city, we have a lot of work to do. And I have a very, very receptive police department in doing that work. And if I could stress a few different things. So let's take our community policing model, which I could talk to you all morning about if you had time. It's huge in this city as compared to other cities or towns around the state or the nation. We embed 17 police officers, one into each of everyone's community. These folks are accessible by cell phone. They're out in the community. They're not answering calls for service, even though they will jump calls for service. They are dealing with the public, talking with the public, talking with the businessmen. And then we throw in a layer of business community service officers that deal with the business communities in Blue Hills Avenue, Park Street, Albany Avenue, and other areas in our city, and Wethersfield and Franklin area, that talk about how we can help those businesses survive, because those businesses survive off the communities that they live in. Our huge faith-based initiative. We're no longer a closed police department where everything is a secret, are we? And you've seen that not only in what I've trended towards, but we put out information to the media. If I don't give you information, don't pour out that information, pour out the facts and circumstances as best I can and be transparent, you're just going to go through my garbage and construct some constellation of stars that lines up with what you want to put out there. I want to put out facts and circumstances as much as I can to be transparent. That transparency is to a certain level, though, because of active investigations I cannot go deeper into. I'd like to talk about, you know, heading down to the White House last week, too.
Yeah.
If you want to.
Please. No, I would love to. I was going to ask you about it, but please talk about that.
Okay. So in that community policing plan, we've built portals or pathways or pipelines to becoming both Hartford firefighters and Hartford police officers. But I like to say public safety careers for our Hartford kids. And I include public safety careers to mean Homeland Security, probation, parole, you name it. Crime analysts, they're big in my police department now, where intelligence and data is huge. We've created those pipelines. It's nice to be recognized as a city and as a police department and as a community as being one of 10 recognized by the White House about those pipelines. And it's even nicer to go to be invited to the White House for our community policing plan of one of 30 cities from around the country, all of which are having the same stress that we're having, whether they're budgets, whether they're crime, whether they're violent crime, or how do we reconcile 100 years with our populations of color. And I think it has to be done in bites, in chunks, and it has to be both ways, right? And I'm not sure how the public is going to take us being open and walking the streets and smiling and sometimes dancing and showing up at every community event.
Well, I'll say, and I think that that all goes a long way for any community, right? And I think that one of the things that you're up against, and you know it better than I do, is that for every person that you have on the streets actually talking with individuals, learning their likes and dislikes, and really building trust, as you say, in the community, now it's, in today's age, it's not just that somebody may have had a bad experience 10 years ago with a Hartford cop in Hartford, but that there are videos surfacing on almost a daily basis from in Hartford and from around the country. I mean, we've seen in the last couple of weeks a few videos, amateur videos shot of arrests in Hartford that showed a number of police on one individual trying to subdue him. And every time one of those comes out, whether it's from your department or in Cincinnati or in Texas or in Ferguson, it's almost like you're fighting an uphill battle toward rebuilding that trust. And then it's a circle again, because if you don't have that trust, you can't get the information from the people about who's got the guns who are going to shoot each other. It just seems like you're in a little bit of a bind right now, and I don't know how you break out of it. Doing this on-the-ground work sounds like the right thing to do, but you're fighting a really uphill battle, doesn't it seem?
Yes, you're talking about a cycle, and we're intent on breaking that cycle or putting a crack in that cycle, which allows us to make inroads. So let's talk about some of those videos. Justin Hartford.
Yeah.
And what we've done. And the playbook around the country is being thrown away. It's being rewritten on every single new incident. Right? In the past, what would we have done? Well, the case is being investigated and no further information is available. Mm-hmm. Really? We can't do that. My public expects more from us. My officers expect more from us. And we are out there. We're explaining these incidents. Let's take a few of them where you see some officers that are trying to subdue defendants in difficult situations. there's nothing pretty about police use of force. And there's nothing pretty about a fight with an individual, and whether they're on a substance or not. And they're very difficult. So what we've done is we've actually shown what we know to date in a timely manner, right? We haven't let it linger. We had a police officer involved shooting. We put it out there within 18 hours, what we know. We put out dispatch tapes. We put out officers' tapes. We put out why they were there. But I'm a proponent of a complete and thorough investigation, because those tapes only give you one view of what happened.
Are you training your officers differently now than you were a year ago, given some of these sensitivities? You said everyone's rewriting the playbook. How are you rewriting it?
Let's talk about lethal force. We actually had an inspection at our range because we were focused on decision making before an officer has to use lethal force. So we actually revamped the entire range procedures and the training down there. Hey, what does the officer know prior to drawing his firearm, prior to discharging a firearm? Let's make those decisions. Let's not shoot any cars. Let's avoid that. Let's look for cover. Let's have conversation, even if it's yelling at him. Let's do other things before we get to that lethal level. My officers understand that, and they've embraced it. So where do we go? Yes, we've had fair and impartial policing. The police department in Hartford actually sponsored up to 12 different agencies to come in. We actually paid for that, for 12 different agencies to begin teaching fair and impartial policing. Not believing that it is right in the forefront of my officer's mind to be prejudicial at any time, but someplace in the back, you never know where it is. But we're asking them to open their eyes, open their mind, and see what's in front of them. We always teach cultural diversity. I have one of the most active academies going, which includes not only training recruits, but also training, continual training for officers. Let's talk about education for a minute, which is entirely different. We have spent upwards of $140,000, $150,000 a year on with some of that drug money that comes back in asset forfeiture for education. There's a lot going on in the police department, and I'm not sure we can get it in 20 minutes.
James Rivella is Hartford's police chief. Thank you, sir, for coming in. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thank you for inviting me.
Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about violence in our capital city and what we can do about it. We'll talk with a pastor and an organizer of a community event that was meant to unify neighbors that ended up turning out violent. You can join our conversation 860-275-7266, comment on our website wnpr.org/where we live, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We just spoke in the program with the chief of police in the city of Hartford about a spike in violence that's led to 19 homicides in the city this year. It's the same number as all of last year, and it pushes against a trend of fewer murders in the city and in the nation over the last few years. We also talked about a series of deaths of African Americans after confrontations with police around the country, and about a disturbing video of Hartford police subduing a suspect. Joining us next are two people who are involved in some of these issues on the community side. And if you want to join us, 860-275-7266, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Joining us is Bishop John Selders, who's pastor at Amistad United Church of Christ in Hartford. He's also a chaplain at Trinity College. Bishop, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I also want to welcome in Maurice Eastwood, who is a senior at Central Connecticut State University. He also organized the Heat on the Street basketball tournament, and he's very involved in his community. And Maurice, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask you first, Bishop, and then I'll ask you to join in, Maurice. You listened to the chief of police just a moment ago as we were talking. I know that you've wanted to sit down and had a conversation with Chief Rivella, which unfortunately we weren't able to set up today. But I guess I'm wondering if you could just give me some of your impressions about the challenges faced by the police department and the way the police department is addressing some of those challenges right now.
Sure. Let me be very clear. Chief Rivella asked to meet with me in a private conversation, and I said to him, responding back to him in a more public setting, that I wasn't so quick to do what we've ordinarily done. The normal response to when things happen in, say, the city of Hartford is officials meet privately with community leaders, a few pastors, and other opinion setters. They set a narrative, and then those leaders go back to community, calm it down a bit, nothing really ever changes. And I said to the chief and others that I wasn't too quick to do that this time because I think it's – somebody said it's insanity to keep doing the same thing expecting a different result. We need, in fact, a different strategy, a way to move forward. And so as I heard Chief Rivella, all of what he said I've heard before. They seem to be his pat stock answers to questions around what the police have done and are doing. I'm not anti-police, but what I am is I am a citizen of this city, in particular Hartford, and I'm asking for our officials to be different, to approach their work differently. I represent a voice of many in the community who just are not pleased, and we're not going to be silent anymore, or we're not going to be shushed by our leadership or by leadership that has been, quote, appointed for us.
Maurice, what are some of your thoughts?
I mean, I wasn't here for to hear everything he said, but going off what Reverend said, I mean, you need a change. Like, I mean, if you had 19 last year total, and you had 19 right now in July, by the time you get to like 8 or 9, wouldn't you have been as worried as you are now? So you wait till you reach the equal amount or 2 below to say you're going to put more patrol on the street, then it's kind of like saying, let's just wait till we match the number, then make a change when you're supposed to attack it from the beginning of the year, or at least when it got to like 8 or 9.
Well, let's talk about attacking the problem, because I think, as the bishop said, there's this old saying about, you know, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again. Every year of this program I've done, 9 years now, there's been a spike of violence in the summertime in the city of Hartford. And every year something happens where the city asks for more cops on the streets, and sometimes that means more state troopers, usually rolling around with HPD in cars. Sometimes different things happen. There have been investments, as the chief said, in the shooting task force, which for the last couple of years put a lot of different sort of resources into the city and seemingly did cut down on the number of gun crimes.
I mean,
but I mean, what are you seeing, though?
So if you came here in 2006, yeah. You said 9 years. So I mean, the year before you came here was 2005. 2005 was pretty bad.
Yep.
So it was 2007. So if you came here in 2006 and now it's 2015, we are at 19. It's not going down.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I mean,
and I'll
what
say
approaches,
yeah.
What approaches was taken to bring it down?
Yeah.
I mean, last time I probably seen foot patrol with my own two eyes, I was probably 12 or younger.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like 11 years ago. So there's no foot patrol, so therefore there's no communication or relationship between what's supposed to be community policing and the people who live in community or work.
And describe for our listeners the difference in your mind between foot patrol, between officers walking around and officers rolling in cars.
You just said it. Yeah. They're driving in cars and walking around. If you're driving in a car, your windows is up. If it's hot enough, your windows are still up. You turn the AC on. So you're not communicating with people. You're not going to bump shoulders with nobody. You're not going to walk into a store, buy a bottle of water, in a bodega and buy a bottle of water or a sandwich or anything. So you're not going to know who the people are.
Yeah, and you don't know who's on. You don't know who's on the block. I live and work in my city, so I know Pookie down the street. I know Derek. I know Jamal. I know Lakeisha. I know these folk, and I'm able to speak to them. In fact, I have interactions with folk who may not be up to the most noble of activities. But when you have relationship, you're able to speak to them. It is very different. When in fact, you see them as criminals, you see them as hoodlums and gangsters, you see them as bad people. And in fact, all of our young people, all of the folk on the street are our community. They are our family. They are our brothers and sisters. And it is just this adversarial relationship. You're right. Again, every year there's an uptick in violence coming out of winter and into spring, and we just do the same kinds of things. I've said to our officials, give me 6,000 jobs, and I bet you Pookie and Ray Ray will have less time to gangbang. There are than they have now. There are underlying issues that we yet still don't address around access, around jobs, around poverty, about housing stock, where we live, where the density of poverty in our communities are all centered in our urban centers.
I mean, like, all right. So you mentioned jobs, schools, living situation. If the focus was so much more on the violence, the gun violence, than the drugs, it'd be a lot better community. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, drugs is a big deal, but it's not as a big deal as someone taking someone else's life. So if you take 75% of the energy and focus on gun violence, it'd be a lot safer community. You can't put the same effort into people's lives being taken into the same effort as the drug violence. Now, if you get arrested for drugs and you happen to get a felony, now you don't have a job. So now if you're a community activist or the police department, you're trying to preach nonviolence, I can't get a job, but I could easily sell drugs. But then I already have a record. But then I have to protect myself. So if you worry about just the gun violence, it'd be a lot easier. I'm not saying that just let people sell drugs, but the gun violence is what's taking people's life.
So you know what I mean?
So it is like, if you really look at Hartford, the crime is happening within, like, it's a rectangle. That's about 5 miles. If you go from one end all the way around up the avenue, down Blue Hills, up Tower, down Main Street, we're leading you right back to the fork of Albany and Main. So it's only 5 miles, equal probably 1.5 miles, the radius as a whole. So it's just like, it's not like it's the whole, from West Hartford, East Hartford, it's just one small area.
Well, for instance, I mean, we hear about a city like Chicago. Chicago is an enormous, sprawling city. It's a huge, and with millions and millions of people. Hartford is a small city, as you say.
But I mean, it's like, yeah, you don't feel appreciated if you live in Hartford.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, let's be real, all right? So I don't know what the papers say or what was discussed before they put the ballpark downtown. But, I mean, if you just sit there and you look at it, even if you're somebody that's coming home from jail or if you're living there, it's like they're slowly pushing us out. So you rebuild Stowe Village. People that was living there before don't live there anymore. Not saying anything wrong with that, but it's there. So then you move Section 8, which is what people hear. It's something that was there before I was born, before you was born, before he was born. So now it's like, okay, so now you put the Section 8, but we're going to put it in far out places. So it's you're no longer in Hartford. Okay. But regardless of what they've been doing since they redone Stowe Village years ago, all up until now, they're doing Mountain Core and probably going to be Westbrook and Both Park soon. The violence is still there. So it's not where you let the people live. It's obviously what's going on in the community. If you just take a lot of your energy and put it into the gun violence, then you'll have a better outcome. You can't be so worried about the other things.
But so how does that work then if you're trying to give a formula to police or to Mayor Pedro Segarra or any mayor in one of our cities about how to deal with this? As Maurice says, the gun violence is the problem, not so much some of these other things, but we have to figure out what's the best way to combat the gun violence, first of all. I'll ask you first, Bishop, and I'd like you to weigh in too, Maurice. I mean, like, what's the formula here for police?
Well, let's be clear. There are underlying precursors to all of the violence that happens in our communities. And I want to be really clear that as it relates to the police, I expect that police are held to a different standard in particular as it relates to violence and violence perpetrated on citizenry. So let me be clear about that. Secondly, I think it is a community-wide issue. It is a region-wide issue. These precursors, lack of access to education, lack of access to jobs, lack of access to affordable health care, lack of access to a nice, decent, affordable, clean, secure living spot. These are precursors that then incubate, if you will, in urban settings, that it's going to take all of the community. It's going to take both civic and social and elected officials. It's going to take business. It's going to take community. It's going to take churches and other social groups and organizations. This is not just a one-size-fits-all. We're going to all have to get together, strategize together, and then allow for some of these plans and projects to work. Here's what my problem is. We didn't have any community involvement. Now we got, in short order, we got a baseball stadium down there, Dunkin' Donut Park. All right? While the violence that has been perpetrated in our communities, both historically and in this very recent time, no plan. No meetings, I mean, no groups.
I mean, all right, so let's just say everybody knows that the kids are the future. So you build a new park downtown, but you got a school like Clark Elementary in Northern Hartford that's being shut down because what's inside of it?
PCBs.
So what is that saying for real? Like, okay, let's bring a ballpark. Nobody in Hartford, at least in the North End, I know, unless the tickets are free or he has nothing else to do, is going to go to Dunkin' Donuts Stadium. It's just what it is. So you build a new stadium, but the schools is jacked. Freddie Wish looks the same from when I went there. It's jacked. You know what I mean? So, okay. But then, like, the biggest issue is can't make change if we don't see the people's, if we don't see the people who's in charge's face. If I don't know your face, you can't walk up to me and start talking to me. I don't know who you are. Especially if a lot of the people in power happen to be Caucasian males, for the most part. So you're going to come to the North and Hartford and expect me to know who you are as soon as you come up to me. Whether if I see you, I'm going to think you're a cop because I don't know who you are. Either you're a cop or you're looking to buy drugs. It's just the reality of it. You can't run away from the facts, and that's just the raw truth of it. But I don't know you. So how am I supposed to listen to you if I don't know you? I mean, I could be as simple as saying, and it's kind of the truth. I mean, I don't know if anybody really cares. Do you really care, or is it just because it's an election year?
Right. See, it's what Brother Maurice is referencing. The question is, do black lives matter, really matter? Do they really matter? The idea that ballparks and others, the building projects, become then the economic engine to drive, you know, the economy of a city, they haven't worked. We've had the Civic Center. We've had Front Street. And I still think that there are vacant storefronts on Front Street. Those ideas that were supposed to be the catalyst for an economic revitalization in Hartford haven't worked. So here we are yet again with another one of these so-called we're gonna make Hartford on the map kind of deal.
I'll just quickly say, as I was saying before, my show's been on for 9 years. I've been here covering Hartford and Connecticut for 20 something years, dating back to some of the plans that went into redevelopment and all the plans before they were building a ballpark in the North End. They were building a whole big, you know, science center and a convention center down along the river. And I talked to a lot of people in the North End who said they're not doing
there.
That. You know, they're not doing that.
There.
Yeah, right.
The only reason I knew the center was downtown was because I go to the fireworks once a year. Other than that, I'm not taking that highway, not taking the bus downtown, so I don't know about the convention. The only reason I know about the convention center is because I was going to the fireworks.
And you literally
and
feel
I
disconnected
in
from
Hartford for 21 years since I came from Jamaica. I lived in Hartford.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's not, I get confused because it's not that hard. It's really not that hard. Like, people in power say, you know, we try to stop the violence, we're trying to stop the violence, but it's like, for example, my event, it's not that hard. It's you live in an area with minorities. What brings minorities together better than a cookout event, sport event, or just any type of event that's free? So how else do you get to know your neighbors unless they're all in the same place at one time? You get what I mean? Yep. So it's like I used to have games every week when I was a kid. In every community, Sands, the back gym in Sands been there since I could remember, and it probably won't be there by the time the summer ends, or probably next summer. Probably gonna get knocked down. It's been closed for like a couple years now, and it's open. I'm quite sure you could find somebody that works for Parking Recs or a city or community activist that should be able to rotate and open the gyms late at night. I mean, the crimes is happening for people that's all younger than me, for the most part, the majority, so majority rules. So I'm gonna say everyone's younger than me. So, and I'm 23. And the youngest is probably about 15, 16. You know what I mean? Some of the dudes on my street is like 15, 14. They smoke weed. So what are you going to do? Automatically look at them and say they're criminals because they smoke weed? No, it's not that. It's not that simple. But you guys make it, not you guys, but the people in power make it seem like it's that simple. You can just look at someone and say, okay, they're this or they're that. Yeah. If you give the kids because that's what you have to worry about. If you give them something to do, recreational-wise, to release their energy and to express themselves, art and music is the two lost art, like the lost things in the schools. Okay, so what's left? Sports. But you have to give them more than one outlet. You can't have a rec league here. Like, the Y stays open till about 10 o'clock and opens at 5 in the morning, but you have to pay for the Y. But the recs open at certain times in the summer because the kids who are getting paid for summer camps go there, or signed up first go there. So you have to find something to do between the hours of 6 or whatever. And then you get there for 2 hours. Then it might be a summer league, so you don't get to do nothing. So you're outside with your friends. That might be the first time you smoked weed because you weren't in summer camp.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Our condition right now is our young people feel unsafe, unprotected, subjected to random acts of violence, and hated for who they are. What do you do in that circumstance, right?
I want to read a couple of tweets and emails. Some people want to join us as well at 860-275-7266 as we talk with Bishop John Selders and Maurice Eastwood. We've been talking about violence in the city of Hartford and some of the underlying causes as we seem to have this conversation every single summer here on Where We Live. Iron Nazario, who we've had on the program before, says, more police means more eyes to see and hopefully prevent more violence. However, other things need to be included. Additional money was secured for summer youth employment. A new round of selections were made after the first spike in shootings. Thanks to Capital Workforce Partners and others, if you take a closer look, though, at who's shooting and dying, they do not represent the summer youth employment population. They're above 20 and even up to 50. Adult employment and other measures need to be in place for adults. That's some from Iron Nazario, and we'll put more information up on our Facebook page today at Where We Live. Let's go to a few phone calls quickly. Kelly is on the line. Kelly's calling from Hartford. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what's up?
Hi, I was just calling to say, you know, I'm not calling to dispute what's going on within the African community and the police department around the nation. That is just, there's nothing to dispute with that. There are problems and they do need to be talked about and resolved. But, you know, for me, and this is my personal opinion, it starts at home with our community. And I mean our community, the African-American community. It starts at home and it goes on through family, through community, through the city and then the state and then on a national level. There are a lot of things. Yes, education is key, but, you know, I'm not too thrilled about the baseball park here in Hartford. I don't see the demand for it, but that does or may bring in jobs. I don't know how much. You said you wanted jobs. People need jobs. Well, there you go.
Well,
if you need jobs downtown, there you go.
Hey, Kelly, thank you.
What you have.
Thank you for your call, and I apologize for cutting you off just because we're up against the break, and I want to get a quick response from Maurice.
All right, so say the baseball stadium does provide jobs. If you have a record, you won't get the job. It starts at home, correct. But before we was here, it's a system that's set up against us to not prevail. So you live in the North End in poverty. It's easier to get drugs to sell and guns to sell than it is to get a job.
Yep.
Just because of the fact that I might not have the education level to read. So if my parent, you say starts at home, my parent, if was caught up in the system, speak for Americans, that was already here because my parents weren't. The percentage to say you're probably you're probably a crack baby because that was the crack era when their parents were coming up. So if I'm the offspring of a parent who is a crack baby, I'm not going to have the right teachings at home. It's a system that's set up against us to lose from the beginning. Very few make it out, which is why it's so... People go so hard to say, yo, it's difficult for us because it really is. Unless you're from here, you just wouldn't know that. I'm not saying I need pity because you have to figure out how to get out of the system. But it isn't as easy for everybody. It's just the percentages. It's just the way it goes. It's not just me. It's everybody. So you have to look out for the person next to you and the person. But some people can't control their actions. It's just systems that's set up before they were here. Mm. It's just the way it goes sometimes.
Bishop, do you have a quick thought before we got a break?
Yeah. We hear this comment in every community setting, in every community meeting. There is a parenting is an issue. And that's I believe it is an issue. My position is we can, as citizens, hold public officials to a higher standard. And I just believe that nobody should be beaten because they're walking the street and they've done something, you know, that they need to be detained by the police. The videos we've seen have just been off the chain and ridiculous. And I say as a citizen, nobody should be beaten. And police violence and brutality is just not the order of the day any longer.
We're talking today with Bishop John Selders, who's pastor at Amistad United Church of Christ in Hartford. He's also a chaplain at Trinity College. Maurice Eastwood, who's a senior at Central Connecticut State University. He's going to be graduating this year. He also organized the Heat on the Street basketball tournament. And we're going to talk more about that and take some more of your calls at 860-275-7266 when we come back, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on Monday's show, actually, we spent a lot of time tracking the performance of Dan Malloy in guiding our ship of state. When he's not at the helm of that boat, he's often going after GOP governors of other states. So in the next Where We Live, we'll check in with our budget guru, Keith Fanna, for the Connecticut Mirror, and we'll check how high-profile rivals, some of the people that Malloy likes to talk about in Louisiana, New Jersey, and Wisconsin, how those governors are doing in running their states. Hope you can join us here on Where We Live. Today in the program, we've been talking about violence in the city of Hartford. The numbers are stark. 19 homicides so far this year. That's as many as all of last year. But it's about more than just the numbers. We talked first with the chief of police, James Revell. And today, we also have in studio with us Bishop John Selders, who's a pastor at Amistad United Church of Christ in Hartford, and Maurice Eastwood, who's a senior at Central Connecticut State University, organizer of a basketball tournament called Heat on the Street, where sadly someone was shot and killed last month. Maurice, you were talking a little bit about your event, and just before we go to some phone calls and things, can you just explain a little bit more about what you were trying to do with this event? Obviously, in many ways, it didn't turn out the way you wanted, and it brought all sorts of attention to it, probably in both a good way and a bad way for you, and that people know what you're trying to do. But of course, when we see violence at this event, you know, a lot of people probably got the wrong idea. What was it you're trying to do with the tournament?
So what I was trying to do was to do with what people did for me when I was a kid, which was give me something to do. So I said to myself, how else would I get everybody together from other neighborhoods, other gangs, put them all in one place, and nothing happens with people from my community? Which is what happened, because, you know, wasn't from my community who did whatever they did. Okay, so I said to myself, I'm gonna go after teams that's gonna bring in the better basketball players. So we had Division I athletes, overseas athletes, local athletes, and high school athletes, all playing in one place. I put it there for a certain reason because it's the center of, and it's the safest part of Hartford, the north end at least. Mm-hmm. And even after that happened, percentage-wise, it's still the safest part of the North End. So I put it all, I put everybody in the same place, expecting that, you know, okay, say the rain came down, cool. The person that's next to you, you might have never met them before, but you have an umbrella. So hopefully you'll be kind enough to say, now let's just say those two people, brothers, was to get into it, and they call each other brother for help. And he's like, nah, I remember them from the basketball tournament. So it's like to build relationship. Also, I was attempting to raise clothes to send and pack in a barrel and send back to Jamaica to people who need it. And I had a friend who passed of cancer on the 21st, but initially it was to raise money for her cancer fund. Mm-hmm. So it was just to, like, bring everybody together and everything. And the major thing of it is I get phone calls now from people that are saying they want help with nonviolence. You can't title something nonviolence and expect the violent people to come. It just doesn't make sense. It's just the dumbest thing I ever heard. Yeah. And it's like, how much do you, if it's a girl or male and you mess up a relationship, you're going to go out your way to fix it. This is important. This is people's life, and I don't feel like people are going out of their way to fix it. I watch some of the mayor debates and stuff like that. There's a reason. That's another reason why, like, when I see like a guy like Luke, I really like what he's doing because I feel like it's passionate. I look at people. I don't care what you say. I look at how you say it. And do you look at when you see me? You look at me when I'm talking. If you look left or you look right, I don't believe it. You know what I mean? It's just how passionate or how much do you really care? I mean, I got little sisters and little cousins and little brothers that's basically up next or up now. Mm. And it's like, you don't have to be from here. You don't have to live here. But while you're in that 5-mile radius that we talk about, do you just walk past the person? Like, do you care about the kids that are growing up? It's like, it's sad. Like, I'm 23, and I have more people that died than even my age. And that's crazy. It's crazy. And it started since I was 12 years old.
Yeah, and I think, Pastor, it is crazy. And I think the thing is, look, I broadcast my program to people all over Connecticut, and there's a lot of people from Hartford and from some other cities that listen, and there's an awful lot of people who have a very different experience, right, and who live in the suburbs, and for whom the story that Maurice is telling is completely foreign. And I guess one of the things we try to do with this is try to figure out how to actually have people understand that story so that they can in some ways influence something, whether, I don't know, in their community. I don't know what your thought is, Pastor, but it's just, I think that's part of the attempt here, right?
I want to say one thing. Like the lady who called in, she said, it starts at home. I'm going to be completely honest. I would consider judging just by my area and my peers that I grew up with, not the people that I'm friends with now, because I met those people when I went to Windsor High School, or later on when I noticed, like, you could go two routes in life, and one's going to end up, one's going to bring you to two places, which is jail or dead. The other one, you'll probably still be in a struggle, but you'll be alive. You know what I mean? So it's just, I would consider myself lucky. I lucked up. I got the right set of teachers when I went to Fox with, like, Sadiq Ali or Mr. Gibson, or when I went to Fox with the guys like Mr. Epps or my high school coaches and stuff like that. So I just got the, I lucked up everywhere I went. I met the right group of people when it's like, I didn't want to go home, but instead of me staying out, I would end up at my friend's house. But his mom happened to care enough that I wouldn't be. So I just lucked up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm still here, though. I didn't luck up and luck out, but I'm still alive at 23, and I'm not in jail with no record. So that's what I mean when I say I lucked up.
Yeah.
People who are in the system still, they didn't luck up. They didn't mess up. It's just... They can't.
And if you got in the system when you're 12 or 13, it's a system that you never get out of. Bishop, we just have a couple minutes left, so I wanted to get your response.
Yes, a couple of things. First off, to those whose experience, as Brother Maurice was talking, is very foreign to them.
Yeah.
Dr. Cain said many years ago that they're inseparable twins, racial injustice and economic injustice. They walk hand in hand. Mm-hmm. We started to organize more Monday, Connecticut, along with my wife and Reverend Cornell Lewis and others, to say, listen, there are a number of things that are connected, that are connections that we need to pay attention to. Not only are we talking about police brutality and what I call overreach, but that is connected to jobs. It is connected to education. It is connected to the school-to-prison pipeline. It is connected to mass incarceration and the new Jim Crow. These are all they are threads that really travel down the same highway. They're the same boulevard. And until we start to do some serious work, I mean, across our community, not just, you know, waiting for City Hall to give us a solution. I just believe we've spent too much time, and I'll say this as an African-American, we've put too much faith in let's get somebody elected. If we get the first black somebody elected, then things will change. We'll get our 40 acres and a mule when President Obama was elected. No. Yes, I want some sensitivity because you know, Mayor Segarra, you're a man of color. You understand the journey a bit more. I want you to have some sensitivity, but you're not the be all and end all. You're not our savior. What I want you to do is to be accountable and responsible. That's the same thing I've said to Chief Rivella, and I'll say it here in this public forum. And thank you for this opportunity. What we're looking for, what many of us are looking for, is accountability and responsibility. When you mess up, say you messed up, and here's how we're going to fix it. Not just this blah, 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 wonk, wonk, wonk of the same.
We just have 30 seconds left, Maurice. I'll give you the last word.
The only thing I ask for is just, we would just like to know who you guys are that's in the position of power. And if we can't have a direct line to you, could we have a direct line to someone who's always with you or has access to you? And lastly, as far as for the guy who, the guy's family who passed away at my tournament, I did open a trust fund for his kids so that when they graduate, if they graduate high school, whatever's in their account at the time will go to them. So I would appreciate if any and all listeners like would just donate, even the people in the studio that's here now, would just donate to go towards his kids. Nothing of it is for me.
We will actually put a link on our website, wnpr.org/where we live. Maurice Eastwood, thank you so much for coming in.
Appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. And Bishop John Selders, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for
sharing your time with us. A lot of people wanted to join the conversation today, and many got involved. If you want to send a note to wnpr.org/where we live, we'll put up a lot more and obviously continue this conversation. I'm John Dankosky. Have a good weekend.